Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Faith Abube. A juror speaking exclusively to ABC News after the conviction of disbarred attorney Alec Murdoch in South Carolina for the murder of his wife and son. Craig Moyer telling ABC's Eva Pilgrim most of the jury felt Murdoch was guilty right off the bat.
It was two not guilty, one not sure, and nine guilty.
What was your vote?
Guilty.
From the start?
Yes.
Suspected tornadoes in Louisiana and Texas, toppling trees and damaging property.
Of course, my grandbabies were crying. They're four and five.
Shirley Carden says she just got her grandchildren home from school when the roaring started. This is ABC News. President Biden this morning will award the Medal of Honor to retired Army Colonel Paris Davis. He was an African-American who fought in Vietnam. He's being recognized for his accomplishments on the battlefield.
You feel pleased that you served your country in the way that you thought you would serve your country. America becomes profoundly your flag that you carry around.
Davis was 26 years old and a captain when he and his team held off the enemy for 18 hours. Today's honor, long overdue. Davis was told the U.S. Army lost his paperwork twice. Congress is zeroing in on George Santos, the House Republican, now the subject of an ethics investigation into lies about his background and his finances. A separate subcommittee formed because of the sheer number of allegations. Santos says he will cooperate with the investigation. Today is the global day of unplugging, challenging you to turn off your phone and go screen-free for 24 hours. The idea? To stress the importance of taking a break from all our digital devices. Faith Abube, ABC News.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Farmers who want to enhance their climate-friendly practices are getting a boost with new federal money. Mike Moen reports.
The USDA announced that through last year's Inflation Reduction Act, it's able to commit nearly $20 billion to programs that oversee climate-smart agriculture. Nearly $900 million is available for the current federal fiscal year. Margaret Crome of Wisconsin's Michael Fields Agricultural Institute says the extra money is crucial because these programs are often oversubscribed.
There's just never been a time that's as good for farmers to apply because this extra amount of funding means it's more likely that you would be funded.
For Wisconsin, there's an additional $2.7 million for the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, along with an extra $4.2 million for the Conservation Stewardship Program. As a result, Wisconsin leaders have extended the CSP sign-up date to March 17th. The application deadline for the other program isn't until later in the spring. And while these programs often use up all their funding, a study published this month says certain challenges are keeping adoption rates low for conservation efforts. Despite broader challenges, Crome suggests committing more resources can help accelerate climate-friendly practices that are key in states like Wisconsin. These include planting perennial crops.
Those are practices that consistently have been shown to hold water. You have much less runoff. You have much better carbon establishment in the soil, so you're holding carbon in the soil.
The new study, which involves several researchers at South Dakota State University, surveyed farmers in the western region of the U.S. Corn Belt. Narrow planting windows and lack of time and labor were among the challenges cited by participants. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing, advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride.
J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. The timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi.
Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bride. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
It was an eventful show. I'm hoping that Jane doesn't clop me upside the head when we walk out of the studio.
The only thing I would really like to know, can we make me smaller?
Yeah, look
it. Can you make it, like, really tiny?
Yeah, I can do that.
Can you make it smaller than that?
No. I saw it go. You prefer this?
Yeah, and let's get some Vaseline for half the length.
You're like, I got into radio for a reason.
Because no one could see me. But this is lovely. I love it.
You love working with me.
I love being a
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon hour. Thank you for spending your lunch hour with us. Jane, how are you doing?
I am great.
Do you eat before or after? During the middle of lunch, I've struggled with this since we started the show. I'm not really a breakfast person, but I also probably should be eating before 2:30.
Yeah, and I don't do that either. And part of the problem is because I used to get up literally at 3 o'clock in the morning. And if you think you're not hungry when you get up at 6:30, trust me, you're really not hungry when you get up at 3:30.
Yeah.
And so I just never got into the habit, maybe a granola bar or something. But even when I started working with you last July, I get in about 8:15, and I had this grand vision for myself. I'm going to get up at 5:30 every day, and I'm going to walk for 45 minutes. And then I'm going to come home and have a scrambled egg and some fruit and, you know, just really do the good things. And that hasn't happened at all. Not even close.
That's basically how I also work. And so the grandiose plans that I have for myself versus what ends up happening, I think I made like a smoothie a couple days in a row, and then the habit died hard. So for those of you who can eat lunch during this time and choose to spend that time while you're eating lunch listening to us, we thank you. All right. Well, coming into the noon hour, we are so excited for our next guest. She is a investigative reporter over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And so I am a colleague with her over there. She's a native Milwaukeean, and she's a solutions reporter that focuses on affordable housing, environment, and equity issues. And one of her more recent articles compared the state of Maryland to Wisconsin and how much better Maryland fared when trying to regulate and improve their lead pipes and lead poisoning situation, and some of the obstacles of why Wisconsin can't do the same. Talis Shelbourne, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on to talk about this issue.
Absolutely. And so let's start at the very, very beginning as far as the fact of what does lead poisoning do? Like, why is this such a issue that needs to be solved?
Yeah, so lead's an entirely foreign substance to the body. It has no role in the body, unlike zinc or iron or some of these other elements that we might think about. And it can build up in the bones because it's so foreign that the body kind of tries to look for the next similar compound, which is calcium. So it builds up in the bones, and then it can block important signals that are important for coordination. And so that's when you see some of those fine motor skills and coordination issues in children. And it also does damage to proteins that are important for central nervous system development. And so that means that it can impact, you know, memory, sustained attention, planning, emotional control, and a big one is impulse control. And that's why we see a lot of kind of ADHD symptoms, difficulty in school, and it's not just an impact on children. It's also an impact on adults. They can have preterm birth and heart attack risks that are much higher due to lead poisoning and lead exposure.
So it's a big deal. And why certain places, and it was kind of ubiquitous up until, was it the 70s when they banned paint that had lead in it and they stopped using lead in new construction. But that doesn't mean it's still not in a lot of places unless different communities, cities, states made the effort to get it out of the community, right?
Yeah, and just to give an idea of how little of lead it takes to cause damage, the CDC's reference level, so that's when it kind of advises intervention by a doctor, is 3.5 micrograms per deciliter in their blood. A grain of sand, like the average grain of sand, is about 50 micrograms.
Wow.
So that's just how little lead can impact, you know, childhood development and adult health. And the concept of lead poisoning has actually been around for quite a long time. Since the Renaissance period, it was observed in painters. It was one of the most well-known studies of it was conducted by a Parisian doctor in the 1800s. It was around in the days of alchemy when it was referred to as Saturnism. So, I mean, this is not a new thing. And as an accountability reporter, it's kind of one of the most frustrating parts of covering this issue is just knowing how much of the history of lead poisoning that is available and how much we already knew about its damaging effects and the fact that it was still being used in paint and gas and, you know, in these lead line laterals and it's in antique toys and all these things, even though we knew better in a lot of ways. And that's one of the most frustrating parts of covering this issue.
I actually had no idea that we've known for that long that this was problematic and that people just continued to still use it. And what's the benefit? Like, why? What is it about using lead as a material that is useful, even though it's harmful?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at some of the lead industry, you know, association kind of information that they put out, they would note that it was good. It was soft. It was kind of easy to work with. It could melt. You know, it was pretty corrosion resistant, it was durable, you know, but it also had those unfortunate side effects.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it had some positive properties, and probably if it wasn't being used in ways that could potentially expose humans to ingesting it or consuming it, it would be a very useful element.
Yeah. We're talking to Talis Shelborn, who is an investigative solutions reporter for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about a recent article she published as far as comparing what Maryland did compared to Wisconsin as far as when it comes to lead poisoning. So that's probably a good segue. So what made you look at Maryland and what they've done? Because I feel like out of all the states that Wisconsin typically compares ourselves to, they're usually a little bit closer.
That is true. You know, I'm constantly kind of becoming aware of problems as a housing reporter, but I also really take the solutions part of my job, you know, seriously. And I think it's important to always look for models around the country or even around the world that can be tweaked and replicated here. And in doing some work around whether or not lead poisoning that causes neurological damage could be reversed, I became aware of the National Green and Healthy Homes Initiative, of which Ruth Ann Norton is president and CEO. And as I spoke to her, he really emphasized an obvious but understated fact, and that's prevention is everything when it comes to lead poisoning. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was able to kind of understand how they went about encouraging prevention, because you can't necessarily require it. You know, you can't necessarily control that part, but you can encourage it from a policy perspective. Norton is one of the architects behind Maryland's lead laws. She worked with the CDC on their advisory committee on childhood lead poisoning prevention. She's worked with the state's lead poisoning prevention commission. And so she was able to walk me through how they kind of tackled this problem. And in looking just at the numbers, 1.2% of children under age six were recorded as lead poisoned in 2019 in Maryland's most populous city, which is Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And in Milwaukee, that number was 5.5%. So they were doing something different and they were doing something right. Yeah, and I wanted to look at kind of how they had implemented this from a policy perspective.
And so what did you find as far as like what have they done and what are they continuing to do?
Yeah, so one thing I want to point out, or two things I want to point out about Milwaukee's kind of lead problem. There's about 66,000 lead line laterals and about 120,000 homes built before 1978 when lead use was pretty common. And one of the things that the Milwaukee's Deputy Health Commissioner of Environmental Health, Tyler Weber, told us is 80% of the children testing positive for lead poisoning are from renting households. And that becomes important when you look at what Maryland did around regulating the rental industry. And so because here in Milwaukee, I'm going to take District 15 from 2019 as an example, compare it to District 14, because it shows how much of this is about maintenance and properly taking care of a home. There are about 7,000 homes built before 1978 and 7,000 lead laterals in 2019 in District 15, and about 1 in 6 children were considered lead poisoned. Wow. In District 14, which is the southeast portion of the city, it's close to the lake, there were 10,000 residential properties built before 1978 and 9,000 lead laterals, so even more. 4.8% of children had lead levels above 5 micrograms per deciliter. So you can see that it's not necessarily the quantity, but it's looking at how the housing is maintained, because 4C's district has it has more homes and more lead laterals, but a lot lower percentage of lead poisoned children. And so when I looked at that, I was interested in understanding what Maryland did to address the rental market. And they do a lot more to kind of encourage accountability towards rental property owners, and they have more proactive policies. So in Baltimore, they do community sweeps, which is a version of what are called proactive housing inspections. I've written other articles about this being done in Chelsea, and they really help keep rental property owners on their toes so they're not just, collecting rent money and failing to address significant health hazards. There's a penalty and you don't necessarily know when these might occur. You're more likely to keep things in working order. And when you have a system that's complaint-based only, that kind of puts the burden and potential retaliation risk on tenants who already have comparatively less. Yeah, they have comparatively less power than landlords already. And another example that Maryland did.
Yes, I'm going to cut you off. We have to go to a break quickly, but I'm going to keep you through the break. So we're going to keep talking about what Maryland did, but also what is in the way of Wisconsin replicating that. Our guest is Talis Shelborn, who is an investigative solutions reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I want a honky-tonk, pretty honky-tonk with you all night long. I'd like to hear some
Hear that? If you own a business, that's a problem. What you really need is this. If you want to make your phone ring this spring, we have just the thing. Sponsor weather forecasts on your local Civic Media station. We've slashed prices on our premium weather sponsorships up to 50%. Tie your business message and phone number into our hourly weather forecasts and get results. But you must hurry.
This spectacular offer ends March 15th.
Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again, then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 45. Winds out of the west, 20 to 25 miles per hour. Lows level off around 23. Tonight, overcast skies. Overcast again tomorrow. Snow likely. Highs level off around 26. 2 to 4 inches of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 38.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
To As Goes Wisconsin, I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Talis Shelbourne about her recent article talking about the difference between what Maryland did to take strong steps to reduce lead poisoning, but what limitations Wisconsin has from doing the same. And so before I had to cut you off because of commercial, Talis, what else was Maryland able to do? And then let's get into the laws in place in Wisconsin that keep us from being able to do the same.
Yeah. I just have one more example of something that Maryland did that I think is really important and really crucial in helping prevent lead poisoning. And that is, before ever renting a unit out and after every change in occupancy, rental property owners who own units built before 1978 in Maryland must have their properties pass an inspection for lead before they can be rented out. And so there's no waiting until a child might have been tested and they might register with a blood lead level that reaches, you know, the CDC reference level. There's no waiting until that happens. They just go in, they check for, you know, chipping, peeling paint, they check, you know, for lead lateral. They do all of these things that they can make sure that the property is safe for a child to be in. And that's something that I think we could really benefit from. And it's another one of those proactive measures that Maryland does that we do not.
Interesting. That it reminds me, because a couple of weeks ago we had Carrie Spivak and Daphne Chen on here and talking about a lot of the landlords and the lack of inspections and everything. And we learned then that when a lot of these laws were put in place, it was at the time when 20% of the legislators in Madison were landlords. And so for the laws you found as far as Wisconsin's oversight into this, were they made around the same time that some of these other leniency for landlords laws were made?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's unfortunate because they're, and I'm sure in talking to Daphne and Carrie, they were able to describe that these are preemptive laws, a lot of these, where they kind of prevent something from even being considered as a policy just by their very nature. Milwaukee has a unique relationship to the state legislature. You know, they're keen on having a lot of oversight over the most of the important things we can do. So whether that's around how a city can raise money or, you know, rental housing rules, the policies that were prevented, and I think I mentioned Act 176 as one of those laws that had an impact. But the policies that were implemented on the state level, they tend to require less accountability from rental property owners. And so the city cannot implement proactive housing inspections, you know, at all. So there's no, you know, checking periodically to ensure that a property is being well maintained and there's not health hazards. It's all complaint based or health based. And I will give credit to the City of Milwaukee Health Department and some of the community organizers, you know, like Cole, a Coalition on Lead Emergency, who are able to get an ordinance passed that does allow kind of like a health-based warrant to go in. But that's only, again, after, you know, a child's been poisoned. So that's not a preventative measure. It's just kind of a reactive one. So there's that. And then there's also a law that prevents any type of certification from being required before a property is rented out. So there is no checking, you know, before a property is rented out or after a change in occupancy to make sure that there aren't lead hazards. It's just, you know, it's, again, it's purely complaint-based. So that means that the city's often responding reactively to lead poisoning cases, you know, in comparison to Maryland. And those policies that are controlled at a state level, they have such an important impact on the city. And a lot of times residents only see kind of, oh, the health department or the, you know, the water agencies, they're not doing enough. That's how they feel. But I think to truly understand why lead poisoning remains such a difficult problem to solve here, we have to look at the system surrounding it, and how we regulate the rental industry is a huge part of that.
And so since, I think, like in just reading your article, there was no response from any Republican legislators to any comment whatsoever, right?
Yeah. I reached out to everyone who had an email that I could find, and I did not get a response. I did get a response from the Democratic legislators who said that, you know, they would welcome some laws that are, you know, similar to the ones that are in Maryland. But I did not get a response from the Republican legislators.
And so it doesn't feel like, at least for the time being, anything's going to change there. Is there a quick, we only have about a minute and a half left, but is there things that Milwaukee can do regardless of these laws that are in place that is making a difference as we try to get some of these lead laterals gone?
Well, the ordinance is helpful. I mean, you know, to have the health department be able to require lead abatement and even perform it and charge the cost to the property owner. And it also prevents retaliatory evictions for reporting lead hazards. So that, you know, that's an important step. There are also agencies like the Social Development Commission and Revitalize Milwaukee and Habitat for Humanity they're adding more staff and getting more lead certified contractors who are able to even do lead abatement work. So that's another positive thing. And there's also a lot of new federal money that's come in over the past couple of years that can be used to address this issue. I know recently some of that money was used for the city to lower its own reference level, which I think it was at 15 at a point, it got lowered to 10. And so, you know, that kind of helps prevent higher cases of lead poisoning from or even higher to lower kind of mid-tier cases from not being addressed.
Absolutely.
But I mean, yeah, it's
rough. It's, I know. I'm going to have to let you go, unfortunately, because this is so fascinating. But I will link the article to our show notes today. It's such a good piece. Thank you so much for joining us, Talis. And thank you so much for your reporting on all things in Milwaukee and equity and housing. I know it keeps you busy. All right.
Yeah,
well,
thank you so much. Yes, of course.
I'll see you in the newsroom. And then when we come back, CJ Safer will be back to talk about education. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. No mercy today from the judge who sentenced Alec Murdaugh for the murders of his wife and son. Judge Clifton Newman giving Murdaugh two consecutive life sentences and then bringing up his own words.
Remind me of the expression you gave on the witness stand. Was it tangled?
Tangled web. We weave.
Oh, what tangled web We weave. What did you mean by that?
I meant when I lied, I continue to lie.
And the question is, when will it end?
Judge saying he believes Murdoch lied at his very sentencing when he doubled down that he had nothing to do with the murders.
I'm innocent. I would never hurt my wife, Maggie, and I would never hurt my son, Pawpaw.
Murdoch was led away in handcuffs and a prison jumpsuit to serve what the judge described as the rest of his natural life in prison. This is ABC News.
Aha! Leprechauns and Wisconsinites have a lot of things in common. We both look good in green. Chicks dig our accents.
You're cute.
And we all love what's on the other side of the rainbow. Get your pot of gold when you sponsor our hourly weather forecasts on your local Civic Media station. That's 24 ads per day. One ad every hour right before the latest weather forecast. And right now, the prices on these premium sponsorships are slashed up to 50%. But you must act before March 15th to take part. Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Broad.
Pro tip, if you look up a chili recipe and it doesn't have pasta in it, don't think you can just use all of the same ratios, and adding a box of pasta will not just make it into pasta with chili as the sauce.
You added an entire box of pasta?
I did.
Yeah, that's a little much.
That's too much. Mm-hmm. I had no supervision.
Or like a chili hot dish.
Yeah, exactly.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Broad. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
I'm 54, so basically, it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference.
Well, right now, saving seems hard to wrap my head around. Plus, with the way this year's been going...
Hey, listen, it's okay. You still got this. Just go to aceyourretirement.org. It's an online tool from AARP that can help you get your retirement savings on track no matter your age. It's free and only takes about 3 minutes.
I like 3 minutes.
Yeah. At aceyourretirement.org, you'll chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach. Just answer a few questions and you'll get a personalized plan and tips to help boost your retirement savings. Tips that are easy to understand and tailored to your lifestyle.
I like that too.
Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back. Just head to aceyourretirement.org and make your plan to start saving for retirement.
Thanks.
That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
I want to.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you.
If you ever Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And this next topic, Jane, you came across this.
We had received an email from someone who was with an organ donation support group and wanted us to run some PSAs about organ donation. And I thought, well, why don't we talk to some of the people who actually do that and find out more specifics about what's involved and what can be used and what you could give now.
And what most of us don't know as far as just being the general public. So we are joined by Colleen McCarthy, who is the VP of Versity Organ and Tissue Donation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about donation.
So I think that it's one of those things where I feel like you hear about it. You hear about kidney transplants and lung transplants and stuff like that. But what is kind of, if you can put it into context of what the need is, either in Wisconsin or even nationally, for wait lists?
Oh, sure. You know, the really interesting thing about organ donation to me is that it is so incredibly rare. It's such a rare opportunity. And so when we look at the national need, there are over 105,000 people on the national waiting list.
Say it again.
105,000 okay. people.
Thousand.
And to take that even a little bit down a level, every 9 minutes another person is added to the waiting list, and every day 17 people die. So over 100,000 people, that list is constantly changing and evolving because people are not getting their transplant in time. And so when we take a look at how many deaths occur in the United States on an annual basis, almost 3 million deaths every year, but only 15,000 organ donors last year. So that need is so incredibly great, and we just do not have enough organs to save those that are on the national waiting list.
So when you say 15,000 donors, that's a combine of people who they're can donate something that you can donate and still live through, but then also people who've died and were organ donors and saying, if I'm dead, you can take my organ.
Oh, like, good question.
Combined?
It's just deceased donors.
Okay.
So 15,000 deceased donors, which really is just a very, very rare opportunity for such an amazing gift.
And is that number seems really low to
mm-hmm.
me.
It is. And you know, one of the reasons that number is so low is that in order for somebody to be a deceased organ donor, the person has to pass away in a hospital on a ventilator. So that's the first criteria. So on a ventilator in a hospital. And then after that, we also evaluate one of the critical criteria for donation is, did brain death occur? So all cessation of the entire brain due to an injury. So pass away in a hospital on a ventilator and be brain dead. And so that number that really brings down the potential number of organ donors. And then after that, we assess for medical suitability, are organs safe for transplant? And then we talk to the family, and not every family says yes. And that's what we hope to increase awareness of, is for people to understand what an incredible gift it is and the meaning that it can give to donor families through their healing process, knowing their loved one could save a life.
Colleen, I'm baffled as to why the requirement that you be in a hospital on a ventilator in order to be considered a suitable donor?
Oh, good question, Jane. So in order for organs to be functioning and to maintain viability for transplant, a person needs to be on a ventilator, and that ventilator gives oxygen to the body. So even when the person's brain stops working, they're declared brain dead, their body is still maintained in the ICU on a ventilator. So their body's getting oxygen, and that's what keeps their organs functioning until we can find a recipient that's a good match for them.
Wow. And so when, and it goes back to the families. So this was going to be my question, because I feel like the last time, every time I have to update my driver's license, there's that box of like, do you want to be an organ donor? And I feel like it's usually next to like, do you wear eyeglasses? and I check the box. And so like, I think by default, I am an organ donor. I didn't realize all those other conditions had to be like, mm-hmm. if I were to pass, all those other things have to happen too. But like, is that enough?
You know, it's a very, very important first step to make your wishes known, to designate yourself as an organ donor. And you can do that when you get your driver's license. You can do it online as well to join the Wisconsin Registry. But we always encourage people, don't just stop at that action. Also, talk to your family. You know, when we meet families in the hospital, you can imagine it is the worst day of their life. These families are in crisis and they're grieving, and we are thrown into their lives at a very difficult moment. And so one of the things we talk to families about is what their loved one wanted. And when we can share with them that your loved one made the decision to be an organ donor, they're going to be a hero. That gives them peace. It takes the burden off of them to make another decision at that time. But sometimes when a person is not a registered organ donor, the family has to make that decision. And you can imagine that's not an optimal time to make very important decisions. And so it's not just enough to sign up to be a donor. We encourage people, we want people to do that, but also to share that decision with your family. Let them know what your wishes are.
Our guest is Colleen McCarthy. She's the VP of Versity Organ and Tissue Donation. And we're talking about becoming an organ donor, who can be a donor, any kind of questions. And if you have a question, you can always text us or give us a call at 844-967-2789. Colleen, my father was a mortician, and we used to talk all the time about how important it is and the best thing that you can do for the people that you're going to leave behind are to set up your arrangements in advance. Mm. And this is just another piece of that, talking to them that you want to be an organ donor. This is what you want, right? It's just taking that burden off of your remaining family members so that it's been decided. You made your decisions, and here's what they are.
You're right. It's part of healthcare decisions. When we fill out our advanced directives, what we want to happen at end of life, donation is naturally a part of that. And so it's not an easy topic to think about. And I think that's what prevents people from potentially signing up is to think about end of life and make some of those hard decisions. But it's part of your healthcare decision making process. It's a very important aspect to consider.
And so, what else do you feel like the public should know? It feels like you, like I said, you checked the box. You can also sign up through Versity, right?
That's right, yes. There is a Wisconsin registry, and you can sign up on DonateLifeWisconsin.org and also on Versity.org as well. There's patient stories on there, donation information, all at your fingertips to help get yourself all informed so you can make a decision that's right for you.
And because there's certainly, you can guess, transplants and organ donations that if you donate it, you no longer can be alive. So like a heart transplant or something like that. But then obviously there's things like kidney transplants. And so, or I assume like bone marrow transplants. And so what are some of the things for people who are alive and also could, whether different tissue or organs that people need, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be deceased.
Sure. Deceased donation, there's also options for living donors as well. And the biggest need in the United States for a transplant is kidney. So a person who is healthy and has two kidneys can be able to donate one of their kidneys to save a life and get somebody off that dialysis machine and give them a second chance. So living donors are able to donate kidneys. You mentioned bone marrow. That's an opportunity as well. And even in some situations, they can donate a small portion of their liver for another patient too.
Oh, that's so interesting. And so Versity, I knew you guys, I knew less about the organ and tissue donations. Cause as I told you at the break, that's where, you know, my joke about when I was at the blood donation and I won because I'm competitive. That was through Versity too. And so is this, what else do you guys, what is like as Versity as an organization? So there's obviously the donation, for organs and tissue, there's blood donations. Is there anything else that you guys do?
Yes. Versity is a big organization, and our footprint is in 5 states. And so we have a world-renowned blood research institute. We also have a diagnostic lab. Our blood services is our biggest service line, and thank you for donating blood. We appreciate that. And the blood that you donate typically stays here in Wisconsin for patients in need, so important. And then we also have our organ and tissue donation service line as well.
Great. And so I guess with... what do you find that through the patient stories is the best awareness to connect with people to understand the importance of what, like the gift they can give to someone?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think about some of the donor families that we've taken care of over the years, and they are incredible people, just amazing people, so generous. And to know that they thought of others at the worst moment of their life, their generosity, their kind spirit, all of that is just remarkable. It's humbling. And so part of our organization responsibility is to support our donor families after their donation and after their loss. And so we have an aftercare program where we stay in touch with our donor families. We can facilitate communication between recipients and donor families as well. And even on some rare occasions, we've been able to coordinate meetings between families and recipients. And it is just the most amazing thing to see. And what it reinforces to me how donation helps these people get through their journey of grief. It gives them peace. It gives them comfort years down the road. And I'd want that for all families, to have that extra comfort during some really difficult times and during grief.
And too, as we were saying before, Colleen, I just think if you can talk to your family about it, get it in your will, make sure they understand your wishes, and then explain why you want to do this. Mm-hmm. The whole potential of someone being able to see out through my eyes or just, you know, have a heart or whatever, that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. The potential for that. And I think, as squeamish as this might make people, and I understand why, but you got to look at the bigger picture. You have to look at the bigger result of this gift that you've chosen to give in, and hopefully get your family on board that way too. Because like you said, if it's not in your wishes and it's not in your will, I can understand the pushback by some families, maybe just not understanding the difference that this can make.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Jane, when we talk to families and their loved one did not register, it's very difficult for them. And many times families say no because they just didn't know. They feel like if their loved one wanted to do this, they would have registered, but it's just not necessarily something people think about.
Yeah.
Anything we can do to inspire people to sign up, share more patient stories, donor family stories, that really shows the human side of it. That shows the incredible gift that donation is, and hopefully it encourages people to sign up and give that gift of life.
Are there any donor patient stories that you want to share?
Oh, I do. I have, I think the most amazing story to share, and this happened in 2018, and it was really incredible, and I think it's a highlight of my career here in organ and tissue donation. And it was a story of one of our donors. His name is Dylan, and his mom has shared this story publicly, and his mom's name is Rachel, and Dylan was 24 years old when he died suddenly. And his mom, Rachel, wanted to donate his organs, her son's organs. She felt very strongly that was the right thing to do. And the heart recipient, her name was Nikea. And Nikea had, she was very sick and would likely not have much more time to live without that transplant. And she received Dylan's heart, and she wanted to give a gift to her donor family. And so she got one of those Build-A-Bears, and she took it to her doctor appointment, and she had a recording of Dylan's heart beating inside of her. And she wanted to give this amazing gift to her donor family. And so when we had the opportunity to coordinate that, both families decided that they would meet in person so that Nikea could give that gift to her donor family. And so we were able to coordinate this. And these families, which is, this meeting, you can imagine the emotion behind it.
Oh, my gosh, I'm crying already.
I know. And they opened this up for people to be part of. And this meeting occurred at St. Luke's Advocate Aurora in their healing garden. So this beautiful setting where a lot of families take some time for having peace and comfort. And they coordinated this meeting. And Rachel, who's the donor mom, she wore a black sweatshirt, and it said, "Stop heroin now." So, you can imagine seeing her son go through addiction, and she, publicly had this saying on. She shared that she said, give your addict's life more worth. And so for her, the ending to her son's story wasn't this tragedy. The ending to Dylan's story was that he was a hero and saved Nikia's life. And so Rachel's listening to her son's heart beat inside Nikia, and she says, "Oh, it sounds so strong." And to just see what that did for those families. Nikia's parents were there, and Dylan's parents were there, and they were there together because Dylan saved her life, and it was just a beautiful moment.
Oh! What an emotional story. Thank you so much for joining us, Colleen. Colleen McCarthy is the VP of Versity Organ and Tissue Donation. We will link all of the information to our show notes today of how you can become an organ donor. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
When it's raining cats and dogs, your business can rain profits. Sponsoring the weather forecasts on your local Civic Media station will get your phone to ring.
Listeners pay attention to weather forecasts, and they'll pay attention to your message.
Act now, because we're slashing prices up to 50% on these premium sponsorships.
But the deals absolutely end March 15th.
Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather. Sponsoring our forecasts is the Cats Meow.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
What is dedication?
I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy skies expected this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 45. Winds out of the west, 20 to 25 miles per hour. Lows level off around 23. Tonight, overcast skies. Overcast again tomorrow. Snow likely. Highs level off around 26. 2 to 4 inches of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 38.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
From the kind of thing you normally play.
Yeah, well, it's part of a trilogy, really, a musical trilogy that I'm doing in D minor, which I always find is really the saddest of all keys, really. I don't know why, but it makes people weep instantly to play a... It's a horn part.
It's very pretty.
You know, just simple lines intertwining. You know, very much like I'm really influenced by Mozart and Bach, and it's sort of in between, though. It's really, it's like a Mach piece, really. It's,
what do you call this?
Well, this piece is called Lick My Love Pump.
Is that Spinal Tap?
That is.
Oh, I got it.
Well done. This is Spinal Tap, the mockumentary by Rob Reiner, released on this date 39 years ago.
Wow.
In 1984, and it remains... one of my favorite movies of all time.
Is it?
Yes.
Are you?
Yes.
Do you like the Christopher Guest and all of the mockumentary?
Yes.
Straight-laced?
I just love Christopher Guest so much. Yeah. And Harry Shearer and Rob Reiner. And the whole film is just, it's a classic. And it will never not be funny to me.
I wonder if Mike's seen it. Maybe we'll watch it tonight. It's been a while since I've seen that, but it's like the accents and the music. It's like, I'm pretty sure this is reaching back into the cobwebs of my mind.
You
like,
did well.
Sure. Nailed it.
Nice. Yeah, nicely done.
You know what I didn't realize? Christopher Guest is married to Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, for a long time.
I just saw something. I recently came across a video of her talking about, she saw him in like a magazine and she just said, I'm going to marry that person. And she had never met him. And I think through her agent, she got his information and somehow reached out to him, and he didn't respond. And so then somehow they were at the same restaurant or something, and they just kind of started making eyes at each other and giving like a head nod.
Hey, how you
and
doing?
And within 4 months, they were married.
Wow. I actually ticked her off once.
Really? Let's hear that story.
Yeah, we had her on, and she had done a really bold magazine piece about the glam squads that actresses have to make them look the way they look when they're on the red carpet. So she did a photo shoot when she's been all done up, and then she did a photo shoot in a sports bra and some, you know, short leggings with no touch-ups, no nothing. It was at the time, it was really very brave of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed by that, so we're interviewing her. And just quickly, I said, oh, and Jamie Lee, I just want to say how much I love your husband, Christopher Guest. And she said, yeah, I do too. Okay, we're not going to be talking about that then.
It did not land well.
It did not land well. And so we went back to, because it was about her. And, yeah. You know, it should have been all about her. But so that's my, I ticked off Jamie Lee Curtis story.
I mean, was it fine?
It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I feel like now I hear her interview now, and I feel like she's grown into and maybe she was always like this, but seeing her interviews now, especially because she's had a lot of press with Everything Everywhere All at Once, mm-hmm. of like no filter. Just
says what she thinks.
Says what she thinks, is very honest about herself. Like, I think she called herself out on like an assumption she had, and I can't remember which actress it was. Oh, I think it was Ana de Armas. It was a Cuban actress. And she admitted this in an interview of how she had to scold herself because her first assumption when she got cast in the same movie, I don't even know what, oh, it might have been Knives Out. And she kind of had this assumption about how good her English was going to be and some things that, and she, in her words, she was like really racist things that I didn't like. And she was talking about kind of how you have to unwire your brain of how we have these biases and the way that your brain just kind of categorizes people before yeah. you meet them. And so like the interviews I've heard her give, she's very no filter as far as just like, very joyful, very honest. There was also, she recently, I guess during the BAFTAs, one of the actresses did some kind of rap. It was the actress who won for playing Anita in West Side Story. I'm blanking on her name. But she did some rap that was like a little cringy. And someone asked Jamie Lee Curtis about the rap, and she just on the red carpet was like, everyone should F off and mind their own effing business and leave her alone. I think she was great.
All
was like,
right, girl.
Good for you.
Tell him.
And so.
And her husband is a sir.
He's been knighted?
He is Sir Christopher Guest because of his British lineage.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Going back to our last segment,
okay.
I just wanted to share this text I got from my sister, Suzanne. We were talking about American Girl dolls and mm-hmm. how they're out now with the newest historical American Girl doll, which
1999.
Sister Suzanne says, I'm listening to you guys talk about American Girl dolls. The Chicago American Girl store is three stories high. They have a beauty salon for the dolls. And I still love going to that store to this day.
There you go.
Make it an event.
You know what? If Nike Town gets three stories, so does American Girl Dolls. I remember the first time we ever went to Nike Town in Chicago, and it had like the indoor basketball court and just shoes everywhere. And it was this like crazy new thing of like, ooh, Nike Town. And I liked sports, so it was cool. But if the sports kids get that.
Yeah.
The doll girls get a three-story American Girl doll store.
I have no problem with that.
Fight me.
Yeah. Bring it on.
All
Bring
right.
It on.
Well, that will do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow for a Friday. Joe Zepecki is going to be here for the whole hour. We're going to get an update from East Palestine, from John Russell. We'll
really
be back.
Looking
yeah.
forward to that.
He's been busy.
Yeah, I bet he has.
He's been very busy. And so I'm really excited to hear what he has to say as far as developments there. But as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. Stick around for Dueling Tangents and come back tomorrow at 11 when we'll do it all again. Thank you.
Hear that? If you own a business, that's a problem. What you really need is this. If you want to make your phone ring this spring, we have just the thing.
Sponsor weather forecasts on your local Civic Media station.
We've slashed prices on our premium weather sponsorships up to 50%. Tie your business message and phone number into our hourly weather forecasts and get results. But you must hurry.
This spectacular offer ends March 15th.
Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
My former boss, George Stanley, former editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I've told you the story of that my brother and I are fighting over who's going to sell our tickets. I think I have claim because I live here.
Exactly.
Right? He's older, but I live here.
Yeah, but that trumps it.
So. It's been decided now. It's done.
I'll tell my parents. That's even more.
You can let him go to one game if he wants.
Yeah, exactly.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic